When Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to the rich man that this manager was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give me accounting of your management, because you are not my manager any longer.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am dismissed as manager, people may welcome me into their homes.' So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, the manager asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He answered, 100 jugs of olive oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 50. Then the manager asked another, 'How much do you owe?' He replied, 100 containers of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes.' Jesus said, 'Whoever is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. And whoever is dishonest in very little is also in much. And if then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you with the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can have 2 masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Let the name of the Lord be blessed from this time forevermore. In an upscale area of a city, there was a young woman who had been working at a desk job for about 8 years. She wouldn't exactly say that she loved her job, but she was good at it. She liked to say it paid the bills. Finally, one day she was recognized for her hard work and her devotion, and she was given a promotion. "This may be what I've been waiting for," she told herself. Then she confided to her friends about accepting the promotion, and then her coworkers became the staff underneath her. And then as things happen, it didn't take long for the whispering to begin among her staff and that passive-aggressive behavior to start when she needed projects to get done. Any project that she started found the staff dragging their feet. So what she did was to increase her work hours and even work on her own days off so that productivity would not show decline. She carried the stress home, and her friends noticed. And then one day they said, "You have to get out of that office. It's sucking the life out of you. You're being eaten alive." To which she would say, "It's not that bad. And besides, I'm making good money, and if it's this bad, it can only get better, right?" She wondered to herself, "How can I look for a job anyway when I'm so busy with this one?" Time passed, and it wasn't long after that conversation with her friends that the company she worked for was bought out, the entire management team replaced. She packed her office and realized at that moment that she had never felt more free. She heard the voice of promise inside of her tell her, "Now you have the time for the career you are passionate about." And she did. And her friends all said it was good to have her back. It was good to see her joyful again. In another place, at a busy coffee house, a middle-aged man worked next to an attractive woman. He hadn't worked there long, but immediately knew he wanted to ask this woman out for lunch, to which she accepted, and they began to date. The relationship continued, and all was well at first. They went to arts and craft shows because it was something that he liked to do. And soon she began to notice that when they went to movies, it was always to see the movie that he wanted to see. He liked the relationship. But Maggie began to realize that something was wrong. She was losing herself, and she recognized that she would not ever be allowed to be his equal. So she gathered up her strength, and she broke off the relationship immediately, and then immediately found her inner strength return. Her friends told her it was good to have Maggie back. So friends, these two little parables are about people that find themselves. The young office worker turned executive, lost in a career that was not fulfilling. She needed to get out of it, but felt she was stuck. And then the more struggles came until finally she found herself because she lost her job. The same with the coworker dating parable. The inner voice of the woman was speaking clearly to her, but it can take some time for us to finally hear the voice of truth within us. When she finally listened, she broke the unhealthy relationship off with the man who did not want to share control or decision making. And these parables, they work for us. Last week's parables, they worked for us too when we learned about the lost coin and the lost sheep and were reminded that God finds the lost no matter what. But I really have to be honest with you, today's parable, it just doesn't work. Maybe it worked for the first century follower of Jesus, but for our ears, it is problematic. While we scratch our heads trying to identify the characters of the parable, because that's what we do with parables, we wonder, is the rich man supposed to be God? God who has left the steward or manager in charge to care for creation? Or is the rich man perhaps God who has left the steward or the manager in charge of caring for the temple? Because each of those understandings are logical at first glance. Because we can all, in a sense, understand how the steward surely might have faltered in caring for the environment. Because we have. Or perhaps been neglecting in the care of the temple, because sometimes we neglect in care of the church. But there's a problem with identifying God to be the rich man in the parable. And the problem is the rich man doesn't behave much like the God we know. First of all, there's this third party that's introduced, the one that brings the accusation to the rich man's attention. The charge is, your steward is squandering property. So the rich man then behaves, well, more like a rich man than God, when the charge is immediately believed. Of course he's stealing from me. Then the rich man in the parable goes on to make two very big business mistakes. The first one is that he fires the manager without an investigation, and the second is he does not collect the accounting books. You see, the manager may have been charged with being inept or wasteful, but the rich man here is just plain ignorant. But the problematic pieces of the parable puzzle, they continue as we get a glimpse into the mind of the accused and now terminated manager. And we hear this comical conversation as the man asked himself, what am I going to do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. Which, after all, is really just a funny way of saying to yourself that you're too lazy to work and too proud to ask for help. But in a rush, all hope is not lost for this good steward. In a selfishness unknown by many, the poor manager realizes that he can still be sneaky. He can still be selfish. So he plans to call in each of the tenants of the rich man in order to lower their debt in the hope that perhaps they will have pity on him when he comes to find that he needs a place to live. Maybe they would even give him a job. Now, even though I'm raising the problems of discerning this parable for our ears today, there is something for us to know. The dishonest manager or the dishonest steward is really not officially called dishonest until he goes off to lower everyone's debt to the rich man. And then in a bizarre turn of events, the rich man enters into the scene to commend the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. By the way, the word shrewdly in the text here is the same word used to describe the serpent in Genesis. I hope you're beginning to see that the rich man in the parable cannot be God, and that the dishonest manager should not be called the hero of the text just because the rich man commended his actions. Because the truth is, he was a steward of injustice. This parable is quite unique, very different from most parables Jesus tells. For usually parables tell us something about God, or they teach us about God's nature, but this one tells us something about humankind, or perhaps better, human unkind. So now we are better prepared to come into this parable. And then when we read that first line that says, there was a rich man who had a manager, we say, of course there was. Rich men always have hired hands, ones to do their dirty work. Managers who are also dishonest, sometimes corrupt, even lazy and malicious. Like in those two parables I told at the beginning of the sermon, these two, the rich man and the steward, they're finding themselves. So today, I offer to you, Jesus is not teaching us about God. Today, Christ is teaching us about us. Because aren't we also a little quicker to believe the story of the fancy-dressed, well-to-do person long before we believe the account made by the person in poverty, the one that wears mismatched clothing? Can't we be honest and say that we often show trust to people based on their social position, and then we're suddenly shocked when they reveal their true selves to us? When all along, if we had just listened to our gut. This unique kind of parable today is one that reveals the truth about people. That people with high status often get a free pass when they mistreat and abuse those who have less or little power. So now we know. Now what? Now Jesus gets super clear with us and with our question, now what? When he says, whoever is faithful with very little is also faithful in much, and whoever is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much, we too find that we are called to account. Not by the rich man. We're not called to account by the rich man who will commend us for acting dishonest and immoral like he does, but we're called to account by the God of mercy who desires us to find ourselves, to recognize where we stand, and to know to whom we are devoted. Is it to money? Is money our master, or is it God? We should know that a long time ago, the North American church made a deal that told us that it was okay to love money and God, that it was possible to love both. And the deal was music to our ears, because it allowed people to act shrewdly and granted permission to follow our greedy nature throughout the week, and then when Sunday rolled around, we could snuggle into God's presence, thinking that we can equally serve these two masters. We can't. And I know that you know. I know that you know that God sees past the false appearances that we use to fool ourselves with. And be sure to hear this, that God finds us long before we find ourselves. But also know we are on the way. Also know that we are dipping our toe into the current of the river of life, and we are slowly finding ourselves in order to give ourselves away. Amen.